Good morning, and welcome to Simply Economics. It's Wednesday, May 1st. On today's show, politics and economics drive swap line decisions according to an IMF paper, and a new study series is set to highlight Africa's economic impact globally. Plus, Americans' economic confidence slips. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Economics. We start off with a new working paper from the International Monetary Fund that examines the factors influencing central banks' decisions to extend bilateral swap lines to other countries. The paper finds that both political and economic considerations play a role in these choices. For more, we're joined now by our economics correspondent. So what exactly did this IMF research uncover about how central banks decide on swap lines?
The authors of this paper wanted to address a gap in the research around what has been driving the growth of the global swap line network. They looked at data on all publicly documented swap lines to determine the key factors. What they found is that a country is more likely to offer a bilateral swap line to another country if they have strong financial and trade links. So the economic ties between the two nations matter. But interestingly, political motivations are also at play. The research indicates that political alliances and strategic objectives influence these swap line decisions as well, not just pure economic rationale.
And why are swap lines important in the first place? What role do they serve in the global financial system?
Swap lines are basically agreements between two central banks to exchange currencies. They provide a foreign central bank with access to the currency of the central bank offering the swap line. This is important for financial stability. In times of market stress or dollar shortages overseas, the Federal Reserve, for example, can use swap lines with foreign central banks to provide them with dollars. The foreign central bank can then lend those dollars to institutions in their country to help stabilize their financial system. We saw the crucial role of swap lines during the 2008 financial crisis and again in the early stages of the pandemic in 2020.
The IMF paper mentions that the drivers behind the growth of the swap line network have been understudied. Why do you think that is, and what are the implications of better understanding these dynamics?
I think swap lines have historically operated somewhat under the radar, despite their importance. Central bank swap agreements aren't always well publicized or transparent. But in recent years, as the network has grown significantly and swap lines have been activated more frequently during crises, there's been growing interest in examining them more closely. Better understanding the economic and political forces shaping the swap network could help us assess potential vulnerabilities in the global financial system. It also sheds light on the interconnectedness of central banks and how that may be influenced by strategic alliances. As the IMF paper shows, these currency swap decisions aren't made in an economic vacuum.
Thanks for that insightful analysis on central bank currency swaps. Shifting our focus to another key economic story, Africa, with its 1.2 billion people, is poised for explosive growth in the coming decades. By 2050, it is expected to be home to a quarter of the global population. However, the continent faces significant challenges, including widespread lack of access to electricity and unsustainable debt levels. Here to discuss Africa's economic potential and the hurdles it must overcome is our Simply Economics correspondent. So, what is driving the growing momentum to tackle these challenges and invest in Africa's future?
There are a few key factors at play. Recently, African heads of state convened in Nairobi to advocate for a major boost in funding to the World Bank's International Development Association, or IDA. The goal is to increase IDA contributions from wealthy nations to at least $120 billion by 2024, up from $93 billion in 2021. The idea is that greater public investment will help attract more private sector financing to the continent.
And it seems this effort is gaining some influential allies, including from the world of finance. What can you tell us about that?
That's right. The CEO of major hedge fund Bridgewater, recognizing Africa's economic potential over the next 50 years, announced plans to publish research later this year in support of increasing funding to the IDA. This comes at a crucial time as governments worldwide face pressure to reduce public spending. The hope is this research will help make the case to Treasury departments that investing in Africa's development will yield strong long-term returns.
But even if the funding comes through, don't institutions like the World Bank also need to evolve to more effectively foster development in Africa?
Absolutely. Ajay Banga, the new head of the World Bank, emphasized this need for the institution to be better during the recent Nairobi summit. Civil society groups are also calling for reforms to the IDA to prioritize civic engagement, transparency, accountability, and equity in all of its operations and investments. Citizen-led accountability will be key to ensuring effective delivery of aid and spurring real progress.
Realizing Africa's vast potential will clearly require sustained investment across many areas, from combating climate change to bolstering food security to advancing gender equality. Where could the ongoing financing for all of this come from?
A recent report actually identified several feasible strategies to generate substantial additional funding, to the tune of at least $675 billion per year, without the need for drawn-out global negotiations. Potential measures include a wealth tax on billionaires, a tax on financial transactions, taxes on fossil fuel extraction, and phasing out fossil fuel subsidies. There are proven examples and existing frameworks to build on.
Fascinating insights. It's clear that while the hurdles are high, the opportunities in Africa are immense for those willing to find innovative ways to invest in the continent's future. Thank you to our Simply Economics correspondent for walking us through the complex dynamics at play. Shifting our focus to the U.S., a new Gallup poll shows that Americans are increasingly pessimistic about the state of the economy. Only 24% of adults surveyed said current economic conditions are excellent or good, while 44% rated conditions as poor. Here with more details is our Simply Economics correspondent. What factors are driving this negative sentiment among the public?
There are a few key factors weighing on Americans' minds when it comes to the economy right now. Inflation remains stubbornly high, with consumer prices up 5% from a year ago, according to the latest data. This is squeezing household budgets as the cost of essentials like food, housing, and utilities continues to rise faster than wages for many workers. At the same time, the Federal Reserve has been aggressively raising interest rates to try to tame inflation. While necessary to cool demand and price pressures, higher borrowing costs are making it more expensive for consumers and businesses to finance purchases. This is contributing to fears of an economic slowdown or even a recession. The Gallup survey also found that confidence fell across the political spectrum in April. Democrats, who have been the most optimistic about the economy under President Biden, saw a 4-point drop in their economic confidence index. Independents and Republicans, already quite negative in their assessments, turned even more pessimistic.
How does the current level of economic confidence compare to past periods? Has sentiment been this low before?
Economic confidence, as measured by Gallup, plummeted in the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, falling from a positive 41 in February 2020 to a negative 32 just 2 months later as lockdowns took hold. Sentiment briefly turned positive again in mid-2021 as the economy began to reopen, but has since fallen back into negative territory. Prior to the pandemic, Americans' views on the economy were consistently more positive during the long expansion that followed the Great Recession. But even then, confidence never reached the lofty levels seen in the late 1990s and early 2000s.
Given the current headwinds facing the economy, what's the outlook going forward? Could confidence rebound in the months ahead?
Much will depend on the path of inflation and interest rates. If price pressures start to ease and the Fed can slow the pace of rate hikes, that could provide some relief for consumers and businesses. A resilient labor market and continued wage growth would also help support sentiment. However, most economists expect inflation to remain above the Fed's 2% target for some time, which could keep borrowing costs elevated and weigh on growth. And if the economy does tip into a recession, confidence would likely take a further hit. For now, Americans are signaling that they're feeling increasingly uneasy about the economic road ahead.
We'll continue to monitor the economic data and public sentiment in the months ahead. On a related note, more than 30 teachers in Hartford Public Schools are now out of a job. The district says it had to make some difficult decisions due to budget constraints. For more on this developing story, we go to our Simply Economics correspondent, Celeste. What can you tell us about these layoffs?
David, Hartford Public Schools announced today that they have laid off over 30 employees, most of them teachers, as part of an effort to close a budget gap. The district is facing a significant shortfall for the upcoming school year and says these staff reductions were unavoidable.
Do we know which schools and programs are most impacted by these layoffs?
The district has not released a detailed breakdown yet of where the cuts are being made. However, they did indicate that the layoffs are spread across multiple schools and grade levels. This is certainly a major blow to a school system that has been working hard to improve student outcomes in recent years.
Absolutely. Our schools have faced so many challenges, especially coming out of the pandemic. How are parents and the community reacting to this news?
There is a lot of concern and frustration among families and community members. Many are worried about increased class sizes and cuts to important programs. The teachers' union has also strongly condemned the layoffs, arguing that they will harm the quality of education in the city.
We know that districts across the country are dealing with tight budgets this year. Are there any indications of how Hartford Public Schools will manage with a reduced staff going forward?
District leaders say they are working to minimize the impact on students as much as possible. They are looking at ways to restructure and consolidate some programs and services. But there's no question that losing this many educators right before the new school year will create some major challenges. The superintendent is expected to release more details on the district's plan in the coming days.
We'll certainly be following this story about the Hartford Public Schools layoffs closely. Thank you for that update, Celeste. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Economics. We'll see you back here tomorrow.